chapter 10. Next, Darius, under whom the temple was restored, obtained the kingdom, his name being at that time Ahasuerus. He had 3 Hebrew of tried fidelity as his bodyguard, and of these had, from the proof of his prudence which he had given, attracted towards himself the admiration of the king. The choice, then, being given him of asking for anything which he had formed a desire for in his heart, groaning over the ruins of his country, he begged permission to restore the city, and obtained an order from the king to urge the lieutenants and rulers to hurry forward the building of the holy temple, and furnish the expense needful to that end. Accordingly, the temple was completed in 4, that is, in the 6th year, after Darius began to reign, and that seemed, for the time, enough to the people of the Jews. For, as it was a work of great labor to restore the city, distrusting their own resources, they did not venture at the time to begin an undertaking of so great difficulty, but were content with having rebuilt the temple. At the same time, Esdras the scribe, who was skilled in the law, about 20 years after the temple had been completed, Darius being now dead who had possessed the sovereignty for 19 years, by the permission of Artaxerxes II, not he who had the place between the two Xerxes, but he who had succeeded to Darius Ahasuerus, set out from Babylon with many following him, and they carted to Jerusalem the vessels of various workmanship, as well as the gifts which the king sent for the temple of God. Along with were but 12 Levites, for what difficulty number of the tribe is related than to have found. He, having found that the Jews united in marriage with the Gentiles, rebuked them severely on that account, and ordered to renounce all connections of that kind, as well as to put away the children which had been the issue of such marriages, and all yielded obedience to his word. The people, then, being sanctified, performed the rites sanctioned by the ancient law. But I do not find that Esdras did anything with the view of restoring the city, because he thought, as I imagine, that a more urgent duty was to reform the people from the corrupt habits which they had contracted. Chapter 11. There was at that time at Babylon one Nehemiah, a servant of the king, a Jew by birth, and very much beloved by Artaxerxes on account of the services he had rendered. He, having inquired of his fellow countrymen the Jews, what was the condition of their ancestral city, and having learned that his native land remained in the same fallen condition as before, is said to have been disturbed with all his heart, and to have prayed to God with groans and many tears. He also called to mind the sins of his nation, and urgently entreated the divine compassion. Accordingly, the king noticing that he, while waiting at table, seemed more sorrowful than usual, asked him to explain the reasons of his grief. Then he began to bewail the misfortunes of his nation, and the ruin of his ancestral city, which now, for almost 250 years, being leveled with the ground, furnished a proof of the evils which had been endured, and a gazing stock to their enemies. He therefore begged the king to grant him the liberty of going and restoring it. The king yielded to these dutiful entreaties, and immediately sent him away with a guard of cavalry, that he might the more safely accomplish his journey, giving him, at the same time, letters to the rulers requesting them to furnish him with all that was necessary. When he arrived at Jerusalem, he distributed the work connected with the city to the people, man by man, and all vied with each other in carrying out the orders which they received. And already the work of rebuilding, one, had been half accomplished, when the jealousy of the surrounding heathen burst out, and the neighboring cities conspired to interrupt the works, and to deter the Jews from building. But Nehemiah, having stationed guards against those making assaults upon the people, was in no degree alarmed, and carried out what he had begun. And thus, after the wall was completed, and the entrances of the gates finished, he measured out the city for the construction by families of houses within it. He reckoned, also, that the people were not adequate in numbers to the size of the city, for there were not more of them than 50,000 of both sexes and of all ranks. To such an extent had their formerly enormous numbers been reduced by frequent wars, and by the multitude kept in captivity. For, of old, those 2 tribes, of whom the remaining people were all that survived, had, when the 10 tribes were separated from them, been able to furnish 320,000 armed men. But being given up by God, on account of their sin, to death and captivity, they had sunk down to the miserably small number which they now presented. This company, however, as I have said, consisted only of the 2 tribes, the 10, too, which had previously been carried away, being scattered among the Parthians, Medes, Indians, and Ethiopians, never returned to their native country, and are to this day held under the sway of barbarous nations. But the completion of the restored city is related to have been effected in the 32nd year of the reign of Artaxerxes. From that time to the crucifixion of Christ, that is, to the time when Fufius Geminus and Rubellius were consuls, there elapsed 398 years. But from the restoration of the temple to its destruction, which was completed by Titus under Vespasian, when Augustus was consul, there was a period of 483 years. That was formerly predicted by Daniel, who announced that from the restoration of the temple to its overthrow there would elapse 79 weeks. Now, from the date of the captivity of the Jews until the time of the restoration of the city, there were 260 years. Chapter 12. At this period of time we think Esther and Judith lived, but I confess that I cannot easily perceive with what kings especially I should connect the actions of their lives. For, while Esther is said to have lived under King Artaxerxes, I find that there were 2 Persian kings of that name, and there is much hesitation in concluding to which of these her date is to be assigned. However, it has seemed preferable to me to connect the history of Esther with that Artaxerxes under whom Jerusalem was restored, because it is not likely that, if she had lived under the former Artaxerxes, whose times Esdras has given an account of, he would have made no mention of such an illustrious woman. This is all the more convincing since we know that the building of the temple was, as we have related above, prohibited by that Artaxerxes, and Esther would not have allowed that had she then been united with him in marriage. But I will now repeat what things she accomplished. There was at that time a certain Vastus connected with the king in marriage, a woman of marvelous beauty. Being accustomed to extol her loveliness to all, he one day, when he was giving a public entertainment, ordered the queen to attend for the purpose of exhibiting her beauty. But she, more prudent than the foolish king, and being too modest to make a show of her person before the eyes of men, refused compliance with his orders. His savage mind was enraged by this insult, and he drove her forth, both from her condition of marriage with him and from the palace. Consequently, when a young woman was sought after to take her place as the wife of the king, Esther was found to excel all others in beauty. She being a Jewess of the tribe of Benjamin, and an orphan, without father or mother, had been brought up by her cousin German, one Mardochius. On becoming espoused to the king, she, by the instructions of him who had brought her up, concealed her nation and fatherland, and was also admonished by him not to become forgetful of her ancestral traditions, nor, though as a captive she had entered into marriage with a foreigner, to take part in the food of the heathen. Thus, then, being united to the king, she, in a short time, as was to be expected, easily captivated his whole mind by the power of her beauty, so that, equalizing her with himself in the emblem of sovereign power, he presented her with the purple robe. Chapter 13. At this time, Mardochius was among those nearest to the king, having entirely under his charge the affairs of the household. He had made known to the king a plot which had been formed by 2 eunuchs, and, on that account, had become a greater favorite, while he was presented with the highest honors. There was at that period one human, a very confidential friend of the king, whom he had made equal to himself and, after the manner of sovereign rulers, had ordered to be worshipped. Mardochius, being the one man among all who refused to do that, had greatly kindled the wrath of the Persian against himself. Accordingly, Haman, setting his mind to work the ruin of the Hebrew, went to the king, and affirmed that there was in his kingdom a race of men of wicked superstitions, and hateful alike to God and men. He said that, as they lived according to foreign laws, they deserved to be destroyed, and that it was a righteous thing to hand over the whole of this nation to death. At the same time, he promised the king immense wealth out of their possessions. The barbarous prince was easily persuaded, and an edict was issued for the slaughter of the Jews, while men were at once sent out to publish it through the whole kingdom from India even to Ethiopia. When Mardochius heard of this, he rent his clothes, clothed himself in sackcloth, scattered ashes upon his head, and, going to the palace, he there made the whole place resound with his wailing and complaints, crying out that it was an unworthy thing that an innocent nation should perish, while there existed no ground for its destruction. Esther's attention was attracted by the voice of lamentation, and she learned how the case really stood. But she was then at a loss what step she should take, for, according to the custom of the Persians, the queen is not permitted access to the king, unless she has been sent for, and indeed is not admitted at any time the king may please, but only at a fixed period, and it happened at the time, that by this rule, Esther was held as separated from the presence of the king for the next 30 days. However, thinking that she ought to run some risk in behalf of her fellow countrymen, even should sure destruction await her, she was prepared to encounter death in such a noble cause, and, after having called upon God, she entered the court of the king. But the barbarian, though at first amazed at this unusual occurrence, was gradually won over by female blandishments, and at length went so far as to accompany the queen to a banquet which she had prepared. Along with him also went Eumen, the favorite of the king, but a deadly enemy of the nation of the Jews. Well, when after the feasting the banquet began to become jovial through the many cups which were drank, Esther cast herself down at the knees of the king, and implored him to stay the destruction which threatened her nation. Then the king promised to refuse nothing to her entreaties, if she had any further request to make. Esther at once seized the opportunity, and demanded the death of Eumen as a satisfaction to her nation, which he had desired to see destroyed. But the king could not forget his friend, and hesitating a little, he withdrew for a short time for the purpose of considering the matter. He then returned, and when he saw Eumen grasping the knees of the queen, excited with rage, and crying out that violence was being applied to the queen, he ordered him to be put to death. It then came to the knowledge of the king that a cross, one, had been got ready by Haman on which Mardochius was to suffer. Thus, Haman was fixed to that very cross, and all his goods were handed over to Mardochius, while the Jews at large were set free. Artaxerxes reigned 62 years, and was succeeded by Ahasuerus. Chapter 14. To this series of events it will be right that I should append an account of the doings of Judith, for she is related to have lived after the captivity, but the sacred history has not revealed who was king of the Persians in her day. It, however, calls the king under whom her exploits were performed by the name of Nebuchadnezzar, and that was certainly not the one who took Jerusalem. But I do not find that any one of that name reigned over the Persians after the captivity, unless it be that, on account of the, 1, wrath and like endeavors which he manifested, any king acting so was styled Nebuchadnezzar by the Jews. Most persons, however, think that it was Cambyses, the son of Cyrus, on this ground that he, as a conqueror, penetrated into Egypt and Ethiopia. But the sacred history is opposed to this opinion, for Judith is described as having lived in the 12th year of the king in question. Now, Cambyses did not possess the supreme power for more than 8 years. Wherefore, if it is allowable to make a conjecture on a point of history, I should be inclined to believe that her exploits were performed under King Ahasuerus, who came after the second Artaxerxes. I found this conjecture on the fact that, as I have read in profane histories, he is related to have been by nature cruel and fifty fond of war. For he both engaged in hostilities with his neighbors, and recovered by wars Egypt, which had revolted many years before. At that time, also, he is related to have ridiculed the sacred rites of the Egyptians and Apis, who was regarded by them as a god, a thing which Begwiz, one of his eunuchs, an Egyptian by nation, and indignant at the king's conduct, afterwards avenged by the death of the king, considering that the king had insulted the race to which he belonged, Now, the inspired, too, history makes mention of this Bagwaz, for when Holofernes by the order of the king led an army against the Jews, it has related that Bagwaz was among the host. Wherefore, not without reason may I bring it forward in proof of the opinion I have expressed that that king who was named Nebuchadnezzar was really Osius, since profane historians have related that Bagwaz lived in his reign. But this ought not to be felt at all remarkable by anyone, that mere worldly writers have not touched on any of those points which are recorded in the sacred writings. The Spirit of God thus took care that the history should be strictly confined within its own mysteries, unpolluted by any corrupt mouth, or that which mingled truth with fiction. That history being, in fact, separated from the affairs of the world, and of a kind to be expressed only in sacred words, clearly ought not to have been mixed up with other histories, as being on a footing of equality with them. For it would have been most unbecoming that this history should be commingled with others treating of other things, or pursuing different inquiries. But I will now proceed to what remains, and will narrate in as few words as I can the acts performed by Judith. Chapter 15. The Jews, then, having returned, as we have narrated above, to their native land, and the condition of their affairs and of their city being not yet properly settled, the king of the Persians made war on the Medes, and engaged in a successful battle against their king, who was named Arexod. That monarch being slain, he added the nation to his empire. He did the same to other nations, having sent before him Holofernes, whom he had appointed master of his host, with 120,000 foot soldiers, and 12,000 cavalry. He, after having ravaged in war Cilicia and Arabia, took many cities by force, or compelled them through fear to surrender. And now the army, having moved on to Damascus, had struck the Jews with great terror. But as they were unable to resist, and as, at the same time, they could not bring their minds to acquiesce in the thought of surrender, since they had previously known from experience the miseries of slavery, they betook themselves in crowds to the temple. There, with a general groaning and commingled wailing, they implored the divine assistance, saying that they had been sufficiently punished by God for their sins and offenses, and begging him to spare the remnant of them who had recently been delivered from slavery. In the meantime, Holofernes had admitted the Moabites to surrender, and joined them to himself as allies in the war against the Jews. He inquired of their chief men what was the power on which the Hebrews relied in not bringing their minds to submit to the thought of submission. In reply, a certain man called Achir stated to him the facts, viz., that the Jews being worshippers of God, and trained by their fathers to pious observances, had formerly passed through a period of slavery in Egypt, and that, brought out from that country by the divine aid, and having passed over on foot the sea which was dried up before them, they had at last conquered all the opposing nations, and recovered the territory inhabited by their ancestors. That subsequently, with various fluctuations in their affairs, they had either prospered or the reverse, that, when they did sink into adversity, they had again escaped from their sufferings, finding that God was, in turn, either angry against them, or reconciled towards them, according to their deserts, so that, when they sinned, they were chastised by the attacks of enemies or by being sent into captivity, but were always unconquerable when they enjoyed the divine favor. So then, if at the present time they are free from guilt, they cannot possibly be subdued, but if they are otherwise situated, they will easily be conquered. Upon this, Holofernes, flushed with many victories, and thinking that everything must give way before him, was roused to wrath, because victory on his part was regarded as principally depending on the sin of the Jews, and ordered Achir to be pushed forward into the camp of the Hebrews, that he might perish in company with those who he had affirmed could not be conquered. Now, the Jews had then made for the mountains, and those to whom the business had been assigned, proceeded to the foot of the mountains, and there left Achir in chains. When the Jews perceived that, they freed him from his bonds and conducted him up the hill. On their inquiring the reason of what had happened, he explained it to them, and, being received in peace, awaited the result. I may add that, after the victory, He was circumcised and became a Jew. Well, Holofernes, perceiving the difficulty of the localities, because he could not reach the heights, surrounded the mountains with soldiers, and took the greatest pains to cut off the Hebrews from all water supplies. On that account, they felt all the sooner the misery of a siege. Being therefore overcome to want of water, they went in a company to Ogeas, their leader, all inclined to make a surrender. But he replied that they should wait a little, and look for the divine assistance, so that the time of surrender was fixed for the fifth day afterwards. Chapter 16. When this became known to Judith, a widow woman of great wealth, and remarkable for beauty, but still more distinguished for her virtue than her beauty, who was then in the camp, she thought that, and the distressed circumstances of her people, some bold effort ought to be made by her, even though it should lead to her own destruction. She therefore decks her head and beautifies her countenance, and then, attended by a single maid servant, she enters the camp of the enemy. She was immediately conducted to Holofernes, and tells him that the affairs of her countrymen were desperate, so that she had taken precautions for her life by flight. Then she begs of the general the right of a free egress from the camp during night, for the purpose of saying her prayers. That order was accordingly given to the sentinels and keepers of the gates. But when by the practice of 3 days she had established for herself the habit of going out and returning, and had also in this way inspired belief in he into the barbarians, the desire took possession of Holofernes of abusing the person of his captive, for, being of surpassing beauty, she had easily impressed the Persian. Accordingly, she was conducted to the tent of the general by Bagwiz, the eunuch, and, commencing a banquet, the barbarian stupefied himself with a great deal of wine. Then, when the servants withdrew, before he offered violence to the woman, he fell asleep. Judith, seizing the opportunity, cut off the head of the enemy and carried it away with her. Being regarded as simply going out of the camp according to her usual custom, she returned to her own people in safety. On the following day the Hebrews held forth to show the head of Holofernes from the heights, and, making a sally, marched upon the camp of the enemy. And then the barbarians assembled in crowds at the tent of their general, waiting for the signal of battle. When his mutilated body was discovered, they turned to flight under the influence of a disgraceful panic, and fled before the enemy. The Jews, for their part, pursued the fugitives, and after slaying many thousands, took possession of the camp and their booty within it. Judith was extolled with the loftiest praises, and is said to have lived 105 years. If these things took place, as we believe, under King Ahasuerus, in the 12th year of his reign, then from the date of the restoration of Jerusalem up to that war there elapsed 20 years. Now Ahasuerus reigned in all 23 years. And he was beyond all others cruel, and more than of a barbarous disposition. Bagwiz, the eunuch, took him off by poison on an occasion of his suffering from illness. After him, Asses his son held the government for 3 years, and Darius for 4. Chapter 17. Against him Alexander of Macedon engaged in war. And on his being conquered, the sovereign power was taken from the Persians, after having lasted, from the time of its establishment by Cyrus, 250 years. Alexander, the conqueror of almost all nations, is said to have visited the temple at Jerusalem, and to have conveyed gifts into it, and he proclaimed throughout the whole territory which he had reduced under his sway that it should be free to the Jews living in it to return to their own country. At the end of the 12th his reign, and 7 years after he had conquered Darius, he died at Babylon. His friends who, along with him, had carried on those very important wars, divided his empire among themselves. For some time they administered the charges they had undertaken without making use of the name of king, while a certain Aretaeus Philippus, the brother of Alexander, reigned, to whom, being of a very weak character, the sovereignty was nominally and in appearance given, but the real power was in the hands of those who had divided among themselves the army and the provinces. And indeed the state of things did not long continue, but all preferred that they should be called by the name of kings. In Syria, Seleucus was the first king after Alexander, Persia and Babylon being also subject to his sway. At that time the Jews paid an annual tribute of 300 talents of silver to the king, but they were governed not by foreign magistrates but by their own priests. And they lived according to the fashions of their ancestors until very many of them, again corrupted by a long peace, began to mingle all things with seditions, and to create disturbances, while they aimed at the high priesthood under the influence of lust, avarice, and the desire of power. Chapter 18. For, first of all, under King Seleucus, the son of Antiochus the Great, a certain man called Simon accused to the king on false charges Ananias the priest, a holy and uncorrupted man, and thus tried, but in vain, to overthrow him. Then, after an interval of time, Jason, the brother of Ananias, went to Antiochus the king, who had succeeded his brother Seleucus, and promised him an increase of tribute, if the high priesthood were transferred to him. And although it was an unusual, and indeed, until now, an unpermitted thing for a man to enjoy the high priesthood year after year, still the eager mind of the king, diseased with avarice, was easily persuaded. Accordingly, Ananias was driven from office, and the priesthood bestowed on Jason. He harassed his countrymen and his country in the most shameful manner. Then, as he had sent through a certain Menelaus, the brother of that Simon who has been mentioned, the money he had promised to the king, a way being once laid open to his ambition, Menelaus obtained the priesthood by the same arts which Jason had employed before. But not long after, as he had not furnished the promised amount of money, he was driven from his position, and Lysimachus substituted in his stead. Then there arose disgraceful conflicts between Jason and Menelaus, until Jason, as an exile, left the country. By examples like these, the morals of the people became corrupted to such an extent, that numbers of the natives begged permission from Antiochus to live after the fashion of the Gentiles. And when the king granted their request, all the most worthless vied with each other in their endeavors to construct temples, to sacrifice to idols, and to profane the law. In the meantime, Antiochus returned from Alexandria, for he had then made war upon the king of Egypt, which, however, he gave up by the orders of the Senate and Roman people, when Paulus and Crassus were consuls, and went to Jerusalem. Finding the people at variance from the diverse superstitions they had adopted, he destroyed the law of God, and showed favor to those who followed him pious courses, while he carried off all the ornaments of the temple, and wasted it with much destruction. That came to pass in the 150th year after the death of Alexander, Paulus and Crassus being, as we have said, consuls, about 5 years after Antiochus began to reign. Chapter 19. But that the order of the dates may be correctly preserved, and that it may appear more clearly who this Antiochus was, we shall enumerate both the names and times of the kings who came after Alexander in Syria. Well, then, King Alexander having died, as we have related above, his whole empire was portioned out by his friends, and was governed for some time by them under the name of the king. 1. Seleucus, after the lapse of 9 years, was himself styled king in Syria, and reigned 32 years. After him came Antiochus, his son, with a reign of 21 years. Then came Antiochus, the son of Antiochus, who was surnamed Theus, and he reigned 15 years. After him, his son Seleucus, surnamed Callinicus, reigned 21 years. Another Seleucus, the son of Callinicus, reigned 3 years. After his death Antiochus, the brother of Callinicus, held Asia and Syria for 37 years. This is the Antiochus against whom Lucius Scipio Asiaticus made war, and he, being worsted in the war, was stripped of a part of his empire. He had 2 sons, Seleucus and Antiochus, the latter of whom he had given as a hostage to the Romans. Thus, then, Antiochus the Great having died, his younger son Seleucus obtained the kingdom, under whom, as we have said, Ananias the priest had an accusation brought against him by Simon. Then Antiochus was set free by the Romans, and there was given in his place as hostage Demetrius, the son of Seleucus, who was at that time reigning. Seleucus dying in the 12th year of his reign, his brother Antiochus, who had been a hostage at Rome, seized the kingdom. He, 5 years after the beginning of his reign, did, as we have shown above, lay waste Jerusalem. For, as he had to pay a heavy tribute to the Romans, he was almost of necessity compelled, in order to meet that enormous expense, to provide himself with money by rapine, and to neglect no opportunity of plundering. Then, after 2 years, the Jews being again visited by a similar disaster to that which they had suffered before, lest it should happen that, driven on by their numerous miseries, they should commence war, he placed a garrison in the citadel. Next, with the view of overturning the holy law, he published an edict, that all, forsaking the traditions of their ancestors, should live after the manner of the Gentiles. And there were not wanting those who readily obeyed this profane enactment. Then truly there was a horrible spectacle presented. Through all the cities sacrifices were publicly offered in the streets, while the sacred volumes of the law and the prophets were consumed with fire.